Voices in Time, recording life stories.
So Bill always thought that a big family belonged in a big old home like the ones in Visitation Parish where he grew up. So we had added on to our home out on Manor Road twice. I loved it. We had 6 bedrooms with a bath in between each two, and that 30 by 30 family room. And I loved the parish. We loved the parish. We were so entrenched. And but one day we saw a home advertised in the Sunday Star, and it was on at 1035 Westover. So we just thought, well, let's just go look at it, and which we did. And it was a big 3-story stone house. It was built in 1911, and it had over 9,000 square feet in it, with a 3-car garage carriage house. And it was the second lot off Ford Parkway on the south side of the street, and at that time the lot next door on the corner was empty. And they had advertised the house with the lot. And Bill, we went through that house and needed so much work. I told Bill, I said, you know, I know who's going to be doing a lot of that work. And I said, I just don't want to move into it because it sort of just overwhelmed me looking at it. And Bill says, well, let me give them a real low bid, which is almost impossible that they will accept it. He says, but just let me try it. So he put this real low bid on the house, and it was minus the lot, because he said that lot isn't big enough for anybody to build on. So we'll just go with the house, which made it even lower yet. Mm-hmm. Well, the owner was a divorced woman who had been living there by herself after her mother had died. And she didn't like living there by herself. And she just wanted to get out of there. And she just wanted enough money to pay pay for the Cadillac she had in the garage. So the realtor was a Visitation woman, Helen Walters, and she was real excited. She came back with a counter offer, and Bill says, when she came back with the counter offer, Bill said, my wife made me promise not to pay a penny more for, you know, that house. So he said, I can't take her counter offer. And the woman said, thought he was out of his mind, you know, because it was such a good price. Because he had really given her a low bid. Well, then a couple of weeks later, she called back and she says, guess what? She said, the Philharmonic wants to use that house as their show house. And she said, if you buy it, give it to them, it will be all cleaned up, every room will be painted by the time you get it. So Bill says, sold. Oh my gosh. I would go to Kureyevar's church, and I would cry on the way home because we were going to be leaving Kureyevar's. And you know, I go to especially the kids' masses, and one day Bill says, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll put our house on the market, and we'll put that one back on the market. This was after we had bought it. Mm-hmm. And whichever one sells first, the other one will live in. Mm-hmm. So, as you would know, the one on Manor sold first. So, We gave it to the show house, and I walked into that beautiful stone house. I mean, it needed, like I said, needed lots of trouble, lots of work, and it was all really dirty and all that. But I walked into that house after the show house started working on it, and it had a beautiful, what we call the East Room, and it had a huge stone fireplace on one wall with a huge mantle on it. It was gorgeous. And the decorator had spray painted the whole room. It was a long, narrow room. It was across the side of the house. He had painted everything a bright orangey red. The ceilings, the brass doorknobs, the stone on the fireplace, besides all the walls. And I just about fainted. And then I went upstairs, and they were putting fabric on the bathroom wall. Which, when we started taking showers, the fabric started peeling off. Well, we finally, I mean, they did things like that that became undone. One of the decorators took the wallpaper off the wall of one of the rooms. And so we told the lawyer with the film running that they were going to have to do something about the East Room, and they reimbursed us for sandblasting, for the sandblasting we did. And I mean, it was sort of a nightmare. And then of course, it wasn't air conditioned, and we moved in the last of May on Memorial Day. And so we had wall-to-wall mattresses in that East Room, because each of the windows on the front, one on the front, one on the back, it was all windows, but there was two air conditioners, one in the front part and one in the back part of it. And it was really funny when we moved in, because we had to name the rooms, and the kids would yell, "Hey, Mom, where are you?" And I'd say, "I'm in the East Room." "Where's the East Room?" "Hey, Mom, where are you?" "I'm in the library." "Where's the library?" We went around doing that for about 2 weeks, and it was, I wasn't too sure, but after we lived there for a while, I grew to really love the house, because it was such a fun place for the kids to grow up in, especially the five younger boys. When we first were trying to decide where to put the boys, where to put the girls, well, first of all, we changed two sunrooms, a den, and the ballroom on the third floor into bedrooms. So that made nine bedrooms, and on the second and third floor. And I w was thir first thought about putting the boys up on the third floor and the girls on the second floor, until one of the boys said, "Hey, look, wouldn't that be fun to jump off that deck onto the deck below?" And I said, "Nope, the boys are going to the second floor." And we had five fireplaces in that house, so when the wind blew, it blew through the house. And we had 4.5 baths, but we only had one shower, and for 13 people. And Bill promised me he'd put another shower in one of the other bathrooms, but we finally got that shower when most of the kids left home. And I remember Jeff, he had to, on the day he got married, he was the last one in the shower, so he took a cold shower. And I thought, well, maybe he needs that. When we moved in, I came with my sign from the kitchen in on matter, put it on the back on the refrigerator with the on Westover. Life is not a problem to be solved, but a mystery to be loved. And Bill put a sign on his mirror in the bathroom. Survival first, then progress. Oh dear. Right after we moved in, Bill's had to go to a, well, went to a conference was in Hawaii. And so we decided to take the six oldest with us. And one of the first cousins babysat with the youngest. Bill said we cut it off at him, and he was Joe said we cut it off at him, and he was psychologically scarred. We were going to leave Anne-Marie at home, but she came home with A+ report card all the way down. So as a reward, she got to go with us. So we got over to Hawaii with those six kids, and we looked at the menus, at the price of those meals. So what we did was we gave each child $5 each morning and told them that was to pay for their breakfast and lunch. And they went to McDonald's close to the hotel. We stayed on Waikiki Beach. And Jan actually came home with change. And then we had dinner with them, you know, at night. Emery and Bill got stuck out on a catamaran, and the lifeguard had to go out after him. It scared her half to death. The lifeguard brought him back. Nick got a really bad sunburn. He had to sleep on his stomach on the way back on the floor of the airplane. And besides that, and we got Jeff didn't realize that you had to pay for those long distance calls that he made to his girlfriend. So we got a big telephone bill at the end of our stay. But besides all that, everybody had a good time. I had many stories about the beach. The beach. One of Bill's salesmen told him that North Myrtle Beach was a perfect place for a family. So we started going to North Myrtle Beach in South Carolina every summer. And we loved it. We loved it. It was a good place for all the kids to go, for all ages to go. Everybody was satisfied with it. Everybody had fun there, and they didn't want to go anywhere else any other summer except the beach. And we would rent houses. When we first started going there, we rented houses that had no TV, no air conditioning. And so we spent all our time on the beach, played cards at night, and played other games with no TV, no telephone, no cell phones at that time. Our family had a real good time together, and it brought us closer together. We didn't have any neighbors or anybody else, you know, with us, except Jimmy Owens one time. Jimmy Owens was Jeff's age, and his mother had died at birth, and he didn't get along with his father because his father blamed him more or less for his mother's death. And he had a stepmother, and he started hanging around our house after he called Bill one night. He was at the police station and he needed to be bailed out. So Bill bailed him out, and Jimmy more or less started staying at our house, and he lived above the carriage house. The carriage house was mainly used for the kids that were in college. When they came home, they would stay out in the carriage house. It had a bath, but it didn't have a phone. And the neighbors always knew when one of them got a phone call because we'd yell out to the carriage house. But anyway, Jimmy showed up at the beach one summer. In fact, he beat Jeff out there. He hitchhiked. He said it was too quiet at home. So he hitchhiked out there. But Billy, I guess, was about 2 years old when we first started going out there. And first year we had a Suburban, but it was called a Suburban, not like the Suburbans that we have now. It was one of the first ones out, and it was bright yellow thing, and it didn't have enough room for the whole family. So we took two cars, and the older kids were in the smaller car, and enough room for four of them, and the rest of the family was in the car with us. And the older kids, we had a carrier on the top of their car, and the older kids, I think we had two drivers at that time, Lori and Jeff, and they followed us. And I looked back one time while we were going along the highway and realized that Lori had and Jeff had changed seats. And the second one was driving. And while we were going 70 miles an hour, I thought, oh my gosh. And then they drove that car clear to the beach and back, parked it in our driveway. And then I went out the next morning, that evening, to put it in the garage. I knocked the carrier off of it and dented the trunk. After driving all that way back, we were home half a day. And I had a wreck with that carrier. But anyway, like I said, everybody had a good time. The girls always ended up at the laundry a half a day doing laundry, which, you know, they never complained about it. I think it was the second or third time we were there. I had had a shift car too. As a second car, Bill decided that all the kids needed to learn how to drive on a shift car. And that's what his uncle did. Bill had an uncle he idolized, and he did almost everything his uncle did because he had a big family also. So he got this shift station wagon, and I was pregnant with Billy. It was while I was pregnant with Billy. And when I got to my last months, I could not reach that clutch without, you know, put the clutch in without scooting up to the edge of the seat, and my stomach would be almost in the steering wheel. And every time I came to an incline, I remember just the small incline at 75th and Ward Parkway going north, I would pray that I could put that clutch in before I backed into the car behind me, you know. So I was so glad when we got rid of that and bought this van. We bought this van. And we should have known that it was a lemon when we went to pick it up, because it said Plymouth on the front and Dodge on the back. And it was a 12-passenger van. On the way home, it stopped dead on us on Row, and we had to call and have it towed back to the place. And we were leaving the next day to go to the beach, so we had to wait till they replaced the alternator. And we started off, and we got to St. Louis, and just got right on the other side of St. Louis, and we started making a noise Well, the first place, we got into the van, and Billy says, I don't have a place to sit. So it's only, there were 13 of us. I thought, oh no, after we got this big thing, now Billy doesn't have a place to sit. Well, anyway, we got to the on the other side of St. Louis, and we started making noise. Well, not too, it was maybe 2 hours later, it blew the rod. So here we were with all of us. It was hot in a van on Friday afternoon on the outskirts of St. Louis, trying to find a place to take the car, a dealership. Well, you know, a policeman come along, and I think it was him that helped us find a place at Edwardsville. And so they came with another van for all of us, and came with a tow truck, picked up our van, and we went to Edwardsville. Well, we drove into the garage at Edwardsville. Bill got out to talk to the dealer, and I got out on the other side, and we just sort of congregated and walked around. Well, when we got back together, Billy was not there. And so I, oh my gosh, where in the world is Billy? And he was with us when we drove up. You know, I knew that. And so everybody started looking for him. And Billy was always wandering off anyway, every time I'd taken him to the store. He loved to hide under the racks, you know, and like, Billy, where are you? And he wouldn't answer me. He just drove me up a tree. But anyway, we finally found him walking down Main Street. He was a little kid, 2.5 years old, walking down Main Street. He had crossed Main Street. It was just, they were having a sidewalk sale, and he was just walking along, looking at everybody, looking at, you know. And, oh my gosh, so glad, never so glad in my life to find someone. So while they worked on that van, we went to a hotel. And we stayed in the hotel room, and then started off again after dark at midnight when they were finished with the van. And from that time on, we decided it was easier just to drive. It was like a 22-hour drive, just to drive straight through than to stop, because when we had stopped, you know, we would stop at a place with the swimming pools. We'd have the wet swimming trunks, and you know, we'd have, by the time we finally got everybody to bed, it was late anyway, mm-hmm. And then we had to, you know, it was like herding sheep almost, you know, out and back. And so we decided to drive all night from then on. And we found a place in Kentucky that had a picnic park and a swim slide. So we would stop and eat dinner there and have at the picnic park. And then the kids would play for about an hour on the swim slide, just in the, it was so hot, you know, their clothes dried right away. They played on the swim slide for about an hour and got all their energy out. We get back in the car and go on to the beach. And everybody would hold together until we got to the beach and then fall apart after we got there. They did a real good job in the car, except for the time they had a Knox block gelatin fight. We had Jell-O all over the car and things, you know, minor things like that. I remember one night waking up. I used to sleep, and there was a step between the floor of the van and the door. You know, the door slid open. It was very narrow, very, very narrow. Well, I found it was easier to sleep in that well instead of, you know, trying to find a place between the kids. The kids are on the floor, on the seats, everywhere. But when I wanted to turn over, I had to stand up out of the well and to go turn the other way. And one night I remember waking up, and Jan had for it was Jan was had just learned to drive, and Bill had her driving. Bill was in the passenger seat, and I woke up to where Jan, where in the world are we? What are you doing? She was off the highway, going 25 miles an hour down the middle of a little town, you know. And she had hit a construction site and taken the wrong turn. I mean, little things like that, you know, happen. But it was better driving clear through. One morning while we were at the beach, after Billy was, it might have been that same trip, all of us woke up at 6:45. It was probably the second morning after we had gotten there, to a knock on the door. And Bill answered the door, and there was a woman standing there holding Billy's hand. And she said, "Is this your little boy?" And we said, "Yes." And she said, "I found him about a half mile down the beach." And to this day, I do not know how he recognized our house and showed her where he was. It could have been the car that helped, you know.
Yeah.
He was still in, I just trained him. So he must have been about two and a half to 3 years old. I always tried to train them early because I was going to have another one in diapers, but I didn't after him, but I did him anyway. But he did have an accident because he pooped in his pants, and then I had one nightgown with me, and he grabbed that and tried to clean up him in the bathroom with it. It was a mess. I remember that because I had to clean it up too. Okay, remember one time at the beach that Nick had a date one night, and he couldn't get the van out of the sand, and so he had to leave it in there, and he was highly embarrassed because we had to get the manager of the place to help us with get the van out of there, out of the sand with a shovel and all that. And then I have to tell you about my walk on the beach one morning. I was, I think I told you about giving seminars with, belonged to the Charismatics. Mm-hmm. And was helping to give the seminars. Well, and we would take turns leading it. And it was Nikki's turn, my friend Nikki's turn to lead it. And the others of us would give a talk, you know, in the seminar. But I told Nikki before I left, you know, I'm sorry that it ended up being during this time that I was going to be gone. Mm-hmm. So I would do penance and pray for, you know, the seminar. And I woke up one morning very early, and I walked out, said my prayers, and it was really nice because there weren't many people on the beach. And I was also collecting shells to make place cards. With these little shells, I would make flowers with him on place cards. And so I had a cup, and I was having a hard time finding the shells, the kind of shells I wanted. So I kept walking down the beach, and I was praying, and this, one of the boys, wanted me to tell the story. It may sound a little weird to you, but I was walking along, and I started hearing this voice, you know, and it said, "Keep on singing, keep on singing." And the farther I'd go, I'd keep hearing it, you know. And I said, Jesus, what are you saying to me? You know, and I was keep on singing. And as I walked along on the beach, I heard singing coming from this house. And it was like a chorus singing, you know. So as I was passing the house, I said, are you telling me to keep on, tell them to keep on singing? And then I kept on hearing, keep on singing. So I thought, uh-oh, here it goes. So I walked up to the door of the house, and I knocked on the door, and someone came to the door, and I said, I have a message for you. And he said, come on in. So I walked in to the house, and there in the dining room was about 15 people standing up in front of a microphone, and they were practicing singing. And this guy says, this lady has a message for us. And I said, I don't know what it means, but the message is, keep on singing. Oh my gosh, they got all excited. And this guy says, you will not believe this. We came as an R to this place for an R&R, and we are a group that travels, and we were thinking of breaking up, and we didn't know what we were supposed to do. And we asked God to, while we were here, to give us an answer. And he said, my gosh, they were just amazed. And I was amazed, you know. And he said, come on and stay and have breakfast with us. And I was in my swimming suit, and I had this paper cup in my hand the whole time, you know. And I said, no, I've got a big group at home that I have to go feed. And so I, on the way home, I was thanking Jesus that I did the right thing, you know, and thanking him that he used me. And I looked down and I had been collecting. I looked at my cup and all these shells were in there, and, you know, they were spilling over. And I thought, oh, my cup runneth over, you know, and I started crying. And because, you know, it was just an amazing thing that I, you know, it wasn't a common thing that happened to me all the time. And, but I would say there were, you know, others after that, but not very many. And I got back to the house, and I was fasting for, I didn't tell anybody about it. And that night, I was giving Jimmy Owens a haircut out in front. I gave haircuts to all the kids, and I was giving him a haircut, and I was in my mind. I was talking to Jesus, and I said, you know, this really has been an amazing day. And I said, and I have been fasting, and it was no problem. I said, with all this junk food around that I usually, you know, have a feast with, I said, I had no problem fasting. And I said, I don't know whether it did any good or not, because you gave me the graces, I guess. I had no problem with it. And just as I was saying this, people at the house next door started singing Amazing Grace on their front deck. And I thought, see how good you are, you know. It was one of the most amazing days of my life. So, one year we had 23 people at our house. We rented a huge house. And I took my mom and dad, Amory and Jan had drove my mom and dad out in their car. And so they were with us. Lindy was married by that time. She came down from Philadelphia with her, and so her friend Betsy and met her there. And by the time people came from everywhere to spend some time with us, we had 23 people at that house. And that was fun. We had a good time. You know, we had lots of people to feed, but it was a great time. And then one summer, Joe was a lifeguard. And so he spent the whole summer there. We stayed a month that year because it was after Bill's surgery, which I will tell you about later. And when we got there, we passed Joe. He was lifeguarding. We passed Joe up because he had peroxided his hair and we didn't recognize him. And we have pictures of him from there. And it was just, I mean, every summer was, it was a different kind of summer because different people were there. Bill's sisters came one summer, and one of them, the one that has 13 kids, a lot of her kids came, and they got their own house, but we had Bill's other sister staying with us, and that was real fun. And I remember one Sunday after Mass, there was two women standing up close to our pew. It was really crowded, and they kept looking at us the whole time. And after Mass, they came up to us and said, "I think we have it figured out." She pointed at me and she said, "You're his wife." And I said, "Yes." And they said, "You two have to be his sisters because you two look just like him." And we said, "Yes." So they spent the whole time. And then one summer, the kids, I forget why they gave it to me, but they gave me a Foxy Mama t-shirt that I wore to church. And I thought, oh my gosh, I got in church, and I thought, I shouldn't have worn this to church, you know. But, you know, we just had a lot of fun, and everybody was relaxed, and just the beach. We had many great memories from the beach.
This has been a Voices in Time production. To learn more, call 913-831-0848.